Welcome to the message podcast of Catalyst Baptist Church, a vibrant church with two campuses located west of Melbourne, Australia. Dedicated to creating a welcoming and safe space for everyone to explore and grow their faith in God, our vision is to see hope multiplied within our community and around the world. We hope this podcast serves as a source of encouragement and spiritual growth for you. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to journeying with you in faith.
Hey, how is your 2025 going so far? We're almost a month in. How many of you have already broken all of your New Year's resolutions? Isn't there great freedom in that? Yeah, yeah, that's awesome, isn't it? So now you don't have the stress, you don't have the pressure. You know, my 2025 has started out a bit different than I expected. There's already been enough chaos in my life to last me for the whole year. So if you were planning on bringing me some chaos, you can keep it, all right? So on January the 2nd, there was a knock at my door at 6 a.m. Who knows that 6 a.m. knocks at the door are never good, right? All right, so I go to the door, and it's a neighbor who's out walking his dog, and he just wanted to let me know that the doors to my truck were all standing open. So, yes, so clearly someone had been through my truck overnight, and I don't keep anything valuable in my vehicle, but they had taken the owner's manual. So then you start thinking, why would they take the owner's manual? And then you Google that and see it, and they're going to go get a key made. They're going to come back and steal it. There's all kinds of things. Or maybe they're just selling the manual online, all those things. So all day long, I'm dealing with that, and I called the dealer, and they assured me it's all okay. And I am now the proud owner of a steering wheel lock thing. So that was awesome. Never wanted one, but anyway. So dealt with all that. Now, I also packed to go to Cambodia. The next morning, I was leaving for Cambodia to go look at some mission projects over there. And at 4:45, I'm settling in for the evening. Okay, it's been a long day, and I'm flying out in the morning, so I just want a relaxing evening, right? Did I get one? Well, 4:45, Deanna's texting with my daughter, Julia, who many of you would know has been pregnant. And she was 33 and a half, 33.45 weeks, a few days. And she was having a checkup at the hospital, and they're texting about dinner to see if Julia's coming around with her husband, Matt, for dinner. That's at 4:45. The next thing I know, it's about 5:05, and we're getting in the car because we're heading to the women's hospital because Julia's being rushed to the OR for an emergency cesarean. So we're not even out of Werribee when we get the call that I've got a new grandson. So Otis Apollo entered the world almost 7 weeks, 6.5 weeks early. By God's grace, if everything's going well today, Otis Apollo's coming home today. So that's great. But remember, I'm planning on relaxing this evening, okay? So I'm still at the women's hospital. It's getting late and everything. And I'm flying out to Cambodia the next morning, which I did. Okay, and for all of you that are judging me right now for leaving when my, all that, everybody was fine, and if they weren't, there's nothing I'm going to do anyway, right? So I get to Cambodia, and everything actually went fairly smooth there and didn't get sick or anything, and the projects were exciting and all that. And then the last night there, I've been very careful this whole time is what I'm eating and everything, and all of a sudden, the stomach stuff, nausea, and everything you can imagine, it was just full-on assault. And that's my last night, and I'm flying out the next morning. I think, do I want to deal with this on an airplane? Probably not. And by God's grace, I didn't have to. It just finished all overnight. So then I'm on the plane, and you hear lots of coughing and stuff going on. Don't you love it when people travel on airplanes and they're coughing? Gives you a sense of warmth and fuzziness and all that. Well, I got off the plane then in Melbourne, and by the time I got home, guess what I was doing? I was coughing and had a sinus infection and having to deal with that the last couple of weeks. And actually just yesterday, I think it's decided it wants to cycle through again. So if I'm coughing a little bit, please forgive me. But things don't always go how we think they should. Life doesn't always go to plan. What do you do when life doesn't go to plan? How does it make you feel? Disappointed, upset, angry, frustrated, whatever word you might want to choose, or maybe normal, that kind of thing. Over the last 5 weeks, we've been looking at some heroes of the faith from Hebrews chapter 11 in our New Testament. And we've looked at Abraham and Moses and Rahab, and we've seen the great stories of their lives. If you missed any of those sermons, go back and look at our YouTube channel or the app or our website. You'll find it somewhere. Just Google Catalyst Baptist Church sermons and you'll find them. Because they're really good stuff for us to build on. Today, I want us to look not at what we've been looking at, because we've been looking at people who actually had great stories and everything worked out well for them. We see Abraham about to sacrifice Isaac on an altar because God told him to, and he had the faith to do it, and then God stopped him from doing it, so Isaac didn't get the knife plunged into his chest. That's a good outcome. And we saw Moses leading the children of Israel through the Red Sea on dry ground, and the water stood high. And then when the Egyptians, it took out the Egyptians after the Israelites were through. It's great to see the hindsight of those great stories. We saw these people were not perfect people by any stretch of the imagination. And the writer wasn't wanting us to look at these people and say, look at these people because they're perfect and you need to model your life after them. The writer is saying, look at their unshakable faith that persevered through difficulties, and look at the great outcomes. Well, today we're going to flip that just a little bit, and we're going to see how we can have faith that is unshakable even when things don't go as expected. I imagine, if you're like me, that is going to connect with you at an even deeper level than some of the great heroic stories that maybe you don't experience in everyday life. There's a couple things we need to understand about unshakable faith. First of all, unshakable faith brings great accomplishments. Through unshakable faith, we can see that. But in unshakable faith, there is often great suffering. Those two seem to go together. They kind of parallel each other. See, we need to know that faith for the future is not about just those big moments. It's about trusting God, even if things don't go as planned, even if we're in the midst of great suffering. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32 says this, how much more do I need to say? Now, before you start cheering and telling me how much more I need to say and I should be done, I got lots to say today, all right? So hang on. It would take too long to recount the stories of the faith of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and all the prophets. By faith, these people overthrew kingdoms, ruled with justice, and received what God had promised them. They shut the mouths of lions, quenched the flames of fire, and escaped death by the edge of the sword. Their weakness was turned to strength. They became strong in battle and put whole armies to flight. Women received their loved ones back again from death. Now, these verses describe tremendous, incredible acts of faith, shutting lions' mouths, quenching flames, and escaping death. And each of these heroes faced impossible odds. And what united them, what kept them going, was that they knew that God's power was not limited by human constraint. They knew that God was powerful enough to overcome their human limitations. See, God's power is experienced during difficult times. Our faith grows through adversity. It's tested through adversity. And today, somebody needs to hear this, that you will know that your faith can be trusted only after it's been tested. It's easy to have faith when everything's going smooth, when it's all peaches and cream or beer and Skittles or whatever we say these days. But when your faith is tested, then you know it can be trusted. And faith starts with believing that God can. See, unshakable faith believes or knows that God can. That's faith in God's power, okay? Knowing God can. Think about God's power. Think about his infinite power, his omnipotence. In verse 34, it says, some quench flames of fire. Now, most theologians believe that's a reference back to something that happened in the city of Babylon. Babylon had a king called Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was not a nice guy by any stretch of the imagination, but he was the king. And he had taken over Jerusalem. And when he took over Jerusalem, he took the best and the fairest of all the young men back with him. They were going to be servants in his kingdom. And four of those guys were Daniel, who was a prophet. And then his friends were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That was their actual Babylonian names that got given to them later. Well, they quickly rose up the ranks in Babylon for a couple of reasons. One, they remained faithful to God. They didn't compromise their faith and their belief. They did what God said rather than what others told them. But also, a circumstance that God provided was Daniel interpreted a dream for Nebuchadnezzar that nobody else could. So Nebuchadnezzar said, hey, I like these guys. I'm going to elevate them in my kingdom. They're going to be rulers. Well, Nebuchadnezzar let his power go to his head. And he decided, I'm going to build a statue. The statue was between 8 and 9 stories tall, made of solid gold. He wanted something big to represent him. I think he was a short guy and probably compensating or something. But anyway, he built this statue and he said, all right, when the music plays, I want everybody to bow down and worship this statue because you're showing me honor and respect when you do that. We now have a moral dilemma for our young friends, the Hebrew young men. Will they bow down and worship this statue, or will they remain faithful to God? Now, I think this could have played out a couple different ways. They could have said, you know what? I can bow down, but I'm not really bowing to the statue. I'm going to bow down, and it'll look like I am, but I'm going to pray to God, right? God will say that's okay, right? And then I can avoid the penalty. By the way, the penalty was being thrown into a furnace, executed by fire. And if I'm one of these guys, I'm going to reason this thing out. And I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to have way more influence for the future if I'm alive rather than dead. Right? So God will understand. You know, he'll let me buy with this. So that's the way I would be thinking. They chose not to do that. When the music played, everybody bowed down and worshiped the idol or the statue, except these guys. They stood and remained committed to their belief in the one true God. Then some of the other Babylonian leaders who were jealous of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went to Nebuchadnezzar and ratted them out. And they're appealing to his pride. They're saying, man, you're amazing, Nebuchadnezzar. We love you, and you're the man. You're the goat, you know, all that kind of stuff, greatest king that ever lived. And they're appealing to his pride, and he said, hey, those guys that you actually elevated and put in leadership over us even, they're not listening to you. They didn't do what you said. They're not worshiping the statue that you created. Daniel chapter 3 tells us that when Nebuchadnezzar heard that, he was furious. He flew into a rage. He threw a tantrum, and he called for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to come and be brought before him. Now, if I'm them, when I get the message, hey, Nebuchadnezzar wants to see you, I already know what's going on because I know what I didn't do. And I'm thinking, oh, man, uh-oh, we're in trouble now. What have we gotten ourselves into? And when they got there, Nebuchadnezzar questioned them and said, guys, what's up? I actually like you guys. I've elevated you in my kingdom. And, you know, I'm asking you to do this, and you're really making me look bad, dudes. But you know what I'm going to do? Because I like you, I'm going to give you a second chance. So let's do it again. Here's the music. Do it. Well, if I'm them, I'm going to tell Nebuchadnezzar, hey, all right, hang on a second. Let me confer with my friends over here. I'll say, guys, remember the option to just bow down and pray to God instead? We could do this. Nebuchadnezzar probably wouldn't even really care, you know? These guys had unshakable faith. Sometimes I don't. Look what they did. It says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. These guys were bold. They said, we have no defense. In fact, we're not even going to try. We don't need to defend ourselves to you. We are guilty. We didn't do what you said, and we're okay with that because we believe that the God we serve is able to deliver us. They understood the principle that unshakable faith knows that God can. They had faith in God's power to deliver them. You know, this reminds me of a guy back in the 1800s in England. His name was George Mueller. He was an evangelist and he was a passionate preacher of the gospel, but he's famous for starting orphanages. And he took care of over 10,000 orphans in his lifetime. On one particular day, there was no food in the orphanage, and it was breakfast time. So George calls all the kids into the breakfast table, and they sit down at the breakfast table, and then George leads them in a prayer, thanking God for what they're about to eat. And there's no food. But then there's a knock at the door. It's probably 6 a.m. Yeah. And it was the baker. And he said, George, I've been awake all night long baking bread because I believed God was telling me, bake bread for the orphans. So George says, hey, not only do we have bread, we've got fresh bread. Then, as soon as that happened, another knock came at the door. It was the milkman. The milkman's cart had broken down right in front of the orphanage. Now, all that milk's going to spoil if he doesn't do something with it, so he gave it to the orphans. You know, that's a great picture of God's provision and God's faithfulness. But do you see where it started? It started with George Mueller praying to God, saying, God, thank you for the food that we're about to have. When it wasn't there, he knew God could. He had faith in God's power. Just like Mueller, we need to live with the conviction that God's power is not limited, that he can do more than we could ever ask or think. What area of your life today do you need to make a declaration? I know God can. Three simple words, or four. I know God can. Right. I know God can. Is it your health? Is it your finances? Maybe you need a breakthrough there. Is it a relationship that just doesn't seem to be working out? Declare, I know God can, because God is all powerful. He can do anything. This is the easy part, guys, by the way. Little hint, we're going to get a little bit tougher in a minute. But once you declare that God can, pray bold, faith-filled prayers, acknowledging him that, God, I know you can. I know you can do the impossible. Hebrews 11 goes on and says, but others were tortured, refusing to turn from God in order to be set free. They placed their hope in a better life after the resurrection. Some were jeered at and their backs were cut open with whips. Others were chained in prisons. Some died by stoning. Some were sawed in half. And others were killed with the sword. Some went about wearing skins of sheep and goats, destitute and oppressed and mistreated. They were too good for this world, wandering over deserts and mountains, hiding in caves and holes in the ground. We see here that some of these heroes experienced miraculous deliverance, but others endured tremendous suffering and persecution and didn't see that. What united them was one thing. They had faith. They had confidence in God's plan. Here we understand that faith believes that God will. Faith believes God wills. Not just God can, but he will, believes his plan. Our young men understood this, the Hebrew boys in Babylon. They said this, the God whom we serve is able, he can, he will rescue us from your power, your majesty. So these guys are talking to Nebuchadnezzar and they said, hey, we know God can and we believe God will. Notice how they addressed him. They said, your majesty. They didn't say, you moron. They didn't say, you idiot, you infidel, or anything like that. They are still showing him respect because he is the king and they should respect the king. But they still had confidence and they just told him, hey, we know God can and we believe that God will. He has a plan. Their faith reflected their understanding of God's goodness in the midst of a trial. The young men didn't know how God was going to do this, but they knew that he could, and now they believed he would. That's what makes faith unshakable, is believing that God's actually going to do it. Knowing he can is the easy part, because God is all-powerful, and most of us can get to the point of saying, okay, yeah, I believe he can do anything. But will he? Believing that he will. You know, believing that God will needs to consider God's will. And that's what they're doing here when they're saying, I believe that God will. They're considering God has a plan and he's going to work his plan. He will do what's in his will. Just like the heroes of the faith in Hebrews that didn't see the outcome they had hoped for. They were unshakable because they believed that God would come through. Several years ago, I had a situation. Some of you know that we came to Australia originally as church planting missionaries because there were no churches in this pagan wasteland when we got here. Yeah, that's actually funny, okay? That's a joke, but not a joke because that's what we were told and we came. And we were experiencing some really good ministry. We were with an organization that had we had worked with to come out here, and there were several others doing the same kind of thing, doing some church planting. And as we were experiencing growth in our church and everything, there was a guy from the U.S. who was in charge of the organization, and he came out to Australia to have a visit. And he talked to all the workers that were out here starting churches and doing other things and some doing nothing and that kind of stuff. And he was evaluating what we were doing. And when he met with me, he said, I love what you're doing. It's going great and everything. But that was the beginning of the week. At the end of the week, we all sat in a room together. And there was tension in the room that day. And I was quiet all day long because that's who I am, right? I don't stir things up. I don't have opinions and things like that. Actually, that's very uncharacteristic. But for most of the day, I was really, really quiet because I just wanted to get out of there and go do my thing. Tension got to the point where I had a Popeye moment. For those of you who don't know Popeye, he's the guy that eats spinach, and he says, I've had alls I can stands. I can't stands no more. And then I said some things, and the leader from the U.S. called a timeout and told me to go to the office. And then he came to the office and sat with me, and she said, Sam, hey, in talking to everybody else through the week, some of the things you're doing make people uncomfortable. I'm like, okay. I'm actually okay with that because if God's telling us to do stuff. Anyway, so we had a really nice chat, and then we reconvened. And he goes up to a whiteboard, and he's got this big marker, and he draws a big circle on the whiteboard. And he writes inside that circle the name of the organization and policy. And he said, here's where we're comfortable working. And then he took the marker and he drew a bunch of little circles outside the big circle. And I have no idea he's about to do this, okay? And he said, you know, as I've been here this week, I've learned that it's possible and probable that Stan might be actually operating in some of these little circles out here. All right, get this. I've got no warning for this. And he says, now, what's going to happen is Stan's going to have a decision to make. He's either going to stop doing the things in these circles and come into line, do what we say, or he's going to have to leave. And as soon as he said that, I already knew what the answer was because it's like, well, you're giving me an ultimatum and you didn't. Anyway, in that moment, I believed that God would rescue because I believed with everything in me, God had called me here. And he wanted me sharing the good news of Jesus with anybody in Australia that would listen. And he wanted me growing churches in Australia. As things played out, I knew God could and I believed he would. He didn't right then. We ended up spending 2 years back in the States because we couldn't stay with the organization. But see, we believed God would and it didn't happen right then. But where am I at today? And I can tell you today, what God has done in my life is so amazing beyond what I could have ever imagined when I first came to Australia. So I am so excited that I believe God would. But there was a couple of years there where I'm like, what in the world just happened? I know God could. I believe he would. And then he didn't immediately. See, we need to move beyond, though, just acknowledging his power that he can. And we need to step into a faith that aligns with his plan. God had a plan, and his plan was to have us here doing this. But it took some time for him to work that out. It might mean trusting him in situations where the outcome is unclear, where it's not what we expect. So I need to ask you today, where in your life do you need to declare, I believe God will? Again, is it your health? Is it the finances? Is it the relationship? Is it your job? Is it work or something like that? You need to start by knowing God can, then believing that God will. Then look at verse 39. All these people earned a good reputation because of their faith, yet none of them received all that God had promised. Oh, wow. None of them received all that God had promised. For God had something better in mind for us, so that they would not reach perfection without us. Wow. These verses remind us that these guys didn't receive what they hoped for or all that God had promised. Their faith wasn't contingent on the outcome. It was on God's faithfulness. And they didn't know what was going on, but they trusted, and God had something better in mind. See, this was a generational fulfillment. You see that? It says God had something better in mind for who? For us. See, when they didn't receive everything firsthand right then, there was more to come. And that includes you, and that includes me. That's why we're here today, because God had something better in mind. You know, this kind of faith, the unshakable faith that trusts God, knowing he can, believing he will. But what about when it's fuzzy and we don't understand? Our Hebrew friends understood this. Look what they did. They said, God's able. He will rescue us. But even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, your majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up. Unshakable faith. Trust, even if. Even if. That's faith in God's presence. They trusted God's power and his plan, and now his presence. See, their faith was not based on the results, but on their commitment to God himself. As the story plays out, Nebuchadnezzar was certainly still ticked off. And he said this, he said, okay, guys, go heat up the furnace 7 times hotter than it usually is. It's already hot enough to kill him, but I want to make sure. And he told the soldiers, grab the dudes, throw them in. They're done. When they threw them in the furnace, it was so hot that the soldiers that threw them in were consumed by the fire. They were burnt up. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are now in the furnace, and they're not being consumed. Nebuchadnezzar's looking in, and he sees them hanging out in the furnace, just standing there, laying there, whatever they were doing, just hanging out. And he said to his associates, didn't we throw 3 guys in? They said, yep, yes, sir, king, your majesty, great, perfect person, you. We threw 3 in. You're right. He said, but I see 4. And the 4th one looks like a son of the gods. Nebuchadnezzar saw what most theologians believe was a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ, that Jesus was in the fire with them. Nebuchadnezzar said to them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you are the servants of the Most High God. Come on out of there. Come on out of there. They came out. Their hair wasn't singed. It says their clothes didn't even smell like smoke. See, the divine presence not only protected them, but it was a testimony of God's faithfulness and God's power to deliver. Faith isn't just about the outcome. It's about the one who walks with us through the fire. Notice God doesn't promise to spare us. If I was going to rescue them from the furnace, when they told Nebuchadnezzar no after the 2nd chance and he went into a rage, I would have sent down a bolt of lightning and took him out. That's how I would have rescued them. But God had a different plan in mind. And it was about God's presence with them through the fire. He didn't deliver them from the fire. He delivered them through the fire. So are you willing to trust God when life doesn't go the way you think it should, the way you've planned? I hope so, because the even if he doesn't moments are used in our life to deepen our faith and to make our relationship with God all that much more intimate and fulfilling. He is with us through those trials. That's not the end of the story, because it's not all about us. And see, we lose sight of that sometimes, that when we're going through something, it might be about something besides us. Look at Nebuchadnezzar's response to all of this. Praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angel to rescue his servants who trusted him. They defied the king's command. That's me, by the way. And were willing to die rather than serve or worship any god except their own. Nebuchadnezzar had a transformation here. And what we learn here about their the whole situation there, about them going through the fire, is this. First of all, God's deliverance will glorify him. When we live with a faith that says, even if he doesn't, we may not always see the outcome we want. But you know, if God delivers us, or even just sustains us through it, he will use that to draw others to himself. When you're going through stuff in life, big, hard stuff, did you know that people are watching? People are watching. And how you come through that can be a great testimony to them that could actually point them to him. Say, hey, if you can trust God when you're going through what you went through, then, hey, maybe that's worth checking out. Not only does God's deliverance glorify himself, but God's presence is greater than the deliverance. Imagine, you know, we know the Hebrew boys came out of the fire. But you know what the real miracle was? It was when they were in the fire and God's presence was there with them. What if that's all it was? That, my friends, is greater than the deliverance. See, the fire you're walking through right now may be the place where you encounter God the most deeply. And it may be, people go through stuff and they say, man, would you want to go through that again? And a lot of people say no, but they'd say, but I would want what God did in my life through that. Because of that, faith that is tested can be trusted. And then finally, God's power transforms even our enemies. We see that in Nebuchadnezzar. He was a king who just moments before had set up an idol for everybody to worship that was 8 or 9 stories tall. And now he's saying, hey, guys, respect the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Don't say anything bad about him, because he is the Most High God. Who in your life needs to see your even if faith? Your faith can be the spark that changes someone else's eternity. So what do we do with all this? Well, the heroes of Hebrews chapter 11, some of them saw great things happen, but some never got the promises that they were looking forward to, because God had something better in mind. He was writing a story, and in Hebrews 12, we see that the great cloud of witnesses, the ones we've just talked about in Hebrews 11, are looking down, seeing what's going on. And now we are a part of the great cloud of witnesses because of them. See, God is writing new stories of faith today. And your story is a part of that. My story is a part of that. When we stand firm, knowing God can and believing God will and trusting even if he doesn't, we live as people of irresistible, contagious faith. As we go away today, I want to ask you 3 things. First of all, do you know God can? Are you trusting in his power? That's the easy one. God is all powerful. But do you believe that God will? That's a little more tough, because it requires us aligning our will with God's will. You know, if you're saying, no, I don't believe God will, well, maybe it's something that you know good and well that probably doesn't really align with God's will. But if it's just impossible, you can't have unshakable faith to believe God will. And friends, again, here's where it gets really messy and really tough. Do you have faith even if he doesn't? That's what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego says. Hey, even if he doesn't, we're still not going to compromise. We need to rest in his presence. Because a faith that knows God can and believes that God will and trusts God even if he doesn't is the kind of faith that can move mountains. It's the kind of faith that can light fires and change the world. Friends, that's what we are here for. That's what we want to see happen all around us. What are you facing today? What's going on in your life? What fiery trial is there? Can I ask you, encourage you, to surrender that to God today? Just give it up to Him, because He definitely can. And you need to believe He will, but even if He doesn't, He's still God. Five words for you to take home today. Five simple words. Even if, I still will. Even if, I still will. I want you to be able to walk out today with that, owning that. We believe God can. We know He will. Or know God can, believe He will. But even if, I still will. And maybe you'd sit there and say, you know what? Hey, I'm not ready for that. That's not where I'm at. If God doesn't come through, then it's going to rattle my faith. It's going to shake my faith. I'm not going to have unshakable faith. Can I get you to start back at the first one then? Do you believe God can? Do you know God can? Start there. Declare that in prayer. Let Him know. Do you believe He will? Let Him know that too. Say, you know, God, I know You can, and I believe You will. And then ask Him for the faith to say, even if. Because that one's hard. And you need to depend on Him and His Spirit to give you that kind of faith. Father, thank You so much for the stories of faith that we see in the pages of Scripture. And Lord, as I think about the stuff that we talk about and the things that we see, applying that to our own lives is hard. Lord, because it's hard for us to even comprehend that You can sometimes. And it's even harder sometimes for us to believe that You will. Give us faith to believe. Give us faith and understanding. And Lord, when You don't act the way we think that You should, when You don't come through for us in the way we expected, give us the even if faith that says, my hope is still in You. In Jesus' name.